We're doing state-by-state analysis.
Interview with Paula, P-A-U-L-A, Hawkins, Republican member, Public Service Commission, State of Florida.
Usually tape everything. You know, it was a novelty having a woman run for a statewide office, and so we had that going for you.
We Are you the first woman ever elected to a statewide office in Florida?
Yeah. And first Republican for this job.
Right.
This job's, you know, been in existence since 1887, and it's always had three elected commissioners, and they've always been one party. They've always been men. But I felt it then, you know, the way to run the campaign in 72, in direct contrast to the way the Nixon election was being run. I was co-chairman for the Nixon re-elect for Florida. And we didn't get in trouble in Florida because it's one of the two states that use party officials. You know, you keep saying, you know, that Watergate can't be blamed on Republicans, you know, because the Republican Party had nothing to do with it. But Tommy, who's the state chairman, and I were the chairman and the co-chairman of the committee to re-elect. And we didn't buy their style and we didn't buy their stuff. We pledged a certain percentage and ran it ourselves.
That's what Clark Reed did, too.
And we didn't get in any trouble. And, you know, he chose the chairman, Clark did, but he ran, you know, he told him everything to do. But I was, you know, in direct contrast to the money they were wanting to spend and did spend in a lot of areas. I ran a very low-profile $67,000 campaign for a statewide office. It's unheard of in this state. My opponent spent in the primary, I think about $100,000 to beat the incumbent, just in the primary. And then I ran against him from Labor Day to November. And I used to borrowed one of those motorhomes, and I had two college kids, a girl, a little darling young girl that traveled with me, just graduated from FSU, and two college boys. And that was about it, you know, and we traveled everywhere and called the listening post. And because I felt people, you could just tell they were just up to here with, you know, getting it. And we just went around and asked them what they thought. And, we'd announce on the radio we're going to be in your town, you know, listening post to be there. And if you want to talk to Paul Hawkins about any of the problems facing consumers today, you know, that I'd be there. And if no one came, we'd go to the supermarket, go to the shopping centers, and, you know, just work it good.
Did they come?
After it picked up, momentum picked up, yes, they came. The first who she, you know, and it really, and the press was, helped a lot because the press would always be there, again, with the novelty. The type campaign I was running, and you know, through drive up and park this great big thing, and, you know, it was all decorated up, and we parked, and if no one came, the press was still there. And then I'd say, let's go to the shop. We always agreed to park. We had to park on a shopping center. The thing was so big, you know, so we'd park there and go through the shopping center, and people just, you could tell, you know, you had any rapport for the public at all, that they were ready for that type campaign. You know, I'd ask them, how do you feel about your utility rates, you know, or something like that. If you say I'm running for the Public Service Commission, they did not know what that was, even though they've been the hottest primary in the history of the state when the incumbent was defeated, first incumbent that's ever been defeated. And I thought everybody had a household word, you know, that they just actually know what I was doing, but they did not. And so I changed the verbiage to say, you know, I'm running for an office, going to set your utility rates, you know, for the next 4 years. And boy, they want to talk then, or tell them what we do. And they all had, you know, stuff. You mean I contact you? You mean people really regulate transportation? And even today, now it's been 18 months practically, and I still have such a speaking schedule till, you know, it's the only show in town a lot, and the commission travels the state and holds the service hearings in the 21 service here districts that we have. And golly, we just stack up requests and write them a form letter that we'll speak at your club when we're in your community for a hearing, but I can't come just to your one thing because I'm busy, you know, with the state business. And I still give it 2-3 speeches a week, and still, people don't know what we do. It's getting a lot more attention because of fuel costs, and again, we've been able to capture the imagination of the people by having a housewife type.
Your campaign sort of a mobile version of what Ed Gurney did?
No.
No?
No relation at
all. Doing a Lawton Childs.
I mean Lawton Childs.
No, we really drove around. He flew a lot. You know, I worked for Bill Cramer in that campaign, and we ran into him at the airport all the time. But then he'd go out to the outskirts of the city and walk in. You know, I watched his campaign with interest. But, you know, we put about 8,000 miles on that bus, and two months. We really moved all. We drive late at night to get where we're going to be the next morning, you know, and with the kids, they could take it, and I could take it, and then we'd spend that day and then drive that night, you know, where we're going again. And only in the last about 10 days did I let them drive ahead, and I'd fly to for all the free appearances that were given us as, you know, debates with my opponent. He debated me the first time, the second time. It was fun, you know, I enjoyed it. And the second time he came, and then from then on it was very difficult to engage him anywhere, even for free time. He would, mother was sick a lot, he'd go out of state. It got interesting, you know, but he just wouldn't show up. And then I wouldn't be allowed to go on if he weren't there. So it caused us a little bit of difficulty. But he was so surprised when he was beaten that he had 14 counties recounted. And it took us from Tuesday, I guess, till maybe Saturday afternoon to, you know, get the certified. And while he was in shock, he really never even conceded the defeat. I saw him this year on an airplane, and he's a lobbyist now. He was a six-year state senator, Democrat state senator, real bright, 35, 36, young.
What was his name?
Jerry Lewis.
Why doesn't he believe it?
He couldn't. You know, it just. We had everything going for him. He really ran a good campaign, I'm telling you. He, as far as press and, but he overdid it. He skydived, you know, he flew everywhere, and he'd have all his press conferences on utility steps. He'd go to St. Pete, where the service is not too super, and the telephone business is really not the company's fault, but it's pretty bad, and he'd go there and stand on their steps, and all the press would be there, and he'd say, if I'm elected, I'll revoke their franchise, and we'll get another company, and here will give you a good service. And that was dramatic, and it would make news. But in fairness, the press really is, you know, I get along great with the press, and I like them. I think they're the greatest thing going for the country. And they called me, and wherever I was, and they said, Jerry Lewis had just made a statement, you know, now what would you do? You know, what is your response? And I'd say, well, federal law prohibits a telephone company, the Bell system, from buying an independent phone company since 1927. You know, obviously, Senator Lewis is unaware of the law. Only another independent company could come in there. And General tells us, you know, second or third largest in the United States, and, you know, they're trying to lick the problems there. You know, I'm sure we can improve the service, but you cannot sell that franchise, you know, order it sell to Bell, which is what he said. So it just happened, I mean, ironically, that so many places that we just end up the same place, I don't know why, in the same city, and I get to respond to his great. He was going to roll the rates back $120 million, which is a great number. You know, I almost voted for him myself when I get my bill. I think that'd be neat to roll this back, but there was no way, if you were intelligent and honest, that you could say that statement and live up to your commitment. And that's when I knew that people were fed up with being promised, overpromised, and then you can't deliver. And then they say, you're another phony politician, you've disappointed me, and, you know, I'm through with politicians, because they did make such extravagant things. And I just say, I'll cut out the fat, and we'll keep the law by setting rates that are reasonable and fair to the company and the consumer, and make sure the service is superior, because that's all they sell, the service. And I really didn't overpromise, because I wanted, if elected, to be able to keep all my commitments. So I was believable. I think people asked me why I won. I think people believed me. And again, they were ready for a low-cost campaign. We only spent $10,000 on TV. And about broke my heart, because that's the best medium that I can campaign in, especially if you're unknown. And, you know, if you had to run again statewide, I'd...
Are you going to run again statewide?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm really not evading your question. The press asks me that every day, but and we get tons of letters. You know, half of them say, not half, but I'd say 30% say, don't leave. You know, we like you there. You're doing a super job.
Was the party factionalized?
I don't think so.
Based on 1970?
No, I've been in every group there was, I guess. I've been a committee woman since 68, and I worked, 66, I worked for Gurney, ran his campaign. And his opponent withdrew. We ran such a super deal. We just scared out everybody and withdrew. And then we turned our troops over to Kirk, and I worked for Claude Kirk in 66. Then in 68, I was a committee woman. I worked for Nixon. And in 70, we'd all committed to work for Kramer, Gurney, all of us, all the party leaders said, you know, so much riding on you know, Kramer, maybe 68 would be a sweet, and Kramer be, you know, Nardi writes so much seniority that he would really be up there, and that he shouldn't risk it, and that Gurney would run, but in 70, that we'd all get behind Kramer, and I just am somebody that keeps my commitments, and so I was committed to Kramer, and at the last minute when Gurney and Kirk talked Carswell into running, you know, I did not desert Bill, and I worked for Bill, and it did cause a big split in the party. It cost us the election. It cost us the Senate seat and the governor. I believe we could have won both of them without that fracas. But I'm very good friends with Carswell. My daughter is the legislative aide to Congressman Bafalas, who is Kirk's partner, business partner. So, you know, I think I have inroads to and get along with all the would be
factions. The election and those two elections, did it set the party back at all?
Yeah. Well, for a while, we elected new state chairman as a result of it. The previous state chairman had been in Gurney's and Kirk's pocket, and I'm always against that posture for a party that's a minority party. We need an independent chairman that speaks for the party and not for an elected individual. You say what's right, and then you can live with it. And so we did elect Tommy Thomas state chairman. I called and asked him to run. I mean, I knew that the only cure was a new face again. And he was way up from the panhandle, been a Republican in Alabama when there weren't, you know, probably the only used car dealer in the state of Alabama was Republican, you know, he's a young man. So I knew he's a Republican to the core. And he was independent of everybody. So paper made a big deal out of it that Bill Kramer got him to run. That's not true. And we didn't let Bill Kramer call a soul in the state committee to vote for him. We kept Bill out of it because we didn't want to say it was factionalized, and it wasn't. The media didn't believe that, but it's true. They voted for Tommy because they wanted a fresh face, and he immediately is business-oriented. He bought this building here. We've always had kind of a floating crap game in the Republican Party. Wherever the chairman lived, that's where the headquarters was. You pack up all your records and move. You know, it's just not the right thing to do if you're going to grow and have a base. And so he bought he had the party by J.C. building was for sale. It's just 3 or 4 blocks up the street here, that nice little brick building. And he bought that, formed a group. Parties can't buy anything, but we formed a little group and bought that building. And it's great. You know, it's appreciated in value, and it's given us a solid base, and the party has raised more money this year than we ever had before, even in light of all the troubles we've had. And there, you know, I'm sure there's still deep bitterness in people's hearts, you know, individuals. But I think we have more in common than we have not in common, and we can all pull together for whatever we need to do for the party and the state. I was precinct worker a long time. I think that gives me a good, I didn't start at the top. I'm still precinct committee woman in my county. And small, but, you know, people depend on you to tell them what's going on, keep them informed. We send postcards out, that type thing. And I think that keeps you in touch with the people, and that's where I learned politics is at the door. Now everybody says you got to return to the door. You know, ring the doorbell again. They don't trust the, you know, the press and all that. I know. I think it's always been at the door. You know, if you build up a good rapport with people. So it's been interesting to watch us raise our registration and raise money, you know, during this time when you think everybody be in the pits.
You've been in Florida how long?
I've lived in Florida 19 years. I came from Atlanta. I was a Democrat in Atlanta.
Why did you become a Republican in Florida?
Well, I moved here in 55 and was right, you know, I was just old enough at that time to get really interested in national politics and watch the Taft thing, and I read an awful lot about him after that and subscribed to his philosophy. So great. And in Georgia, you don't register by party, you just ask for the ballot. And everybody always asked for a Democrat ballot. There was no action there at all. You know, local level, they just was unheard of. And when I came to Florida, you go down to register and they ask your party, and I said Republican. My husband said, what? You know, he registered Democrat. And the registrar said, you can't vote. If you registered Republican, we don't have any elections in that party at all if you do that. And I said, I thought she would tell me a story. I said, I certainly will, and I did, and I was not able to vote for a long time because nobody ran on that ticket. You only could vote in the general. Now it's changed in my county. We're still out registered 3-1 Democrat, but we hold almost all the seats.
What county is
Orange. But from that time until 64, I guess, or 62, we start picking up county seats, and new people come in. You know, Florida is great at building the Republican Party, and especially in Central Florida, because we have a lot of people from Michigan, Ohio, you know, those states. come in, and they're Republicans. Come down there to retire, and they go down and that help. But the young people, too, got the largest Republican club, young Republican club in the United States, in Orange County. And one is the outstanding Republican club for the United States last year. And again, they're young engineers from Martin, lawyers, you know, young people. Leon, of course, North Florida is still Democrat, but we elect a Republican out of Panhandle since, hell, it's Tom Tobias, and one of the brightest young stars I think we have in our party. Been elected two or three times out of Pensacola. He's Republican. But I tell everybody, you know, since I was elected, I tell everybody that I'm registered in the minority party. But you represent everybody once you're elected. And I think that's how you gain the respect, you know, of the public, is by being fair to everybody, not being too partisan. The other two commissioners are Democrats, and I have really beat them over the head, and I'll confess, I have. Because it's been a one-party commission so long until they just traded off, you know, this time you run, next time you run, next time, you know, and that's the way it was. And there was just a lot of things, there were a lot of things wrong in this commission when I came. And I tried to correct them internally, and you can't with a 2-to-1 vote. It's just, so I had to go to the Attorney General 3 or 4 times, who was, you know, statewide Democrat. But he always had to rule in my favor when I asked for an opinion because I was right. And we got the Sunshine Law to cover the commission, and that's probably been the biggest boon for me.
It was not covered before?
No. They said it was. It should have been. But after I went to about the first 3 or 4 meetings and saw how it was run and how they changed their votes and how the companies call up from New York and say, is it true your orders are coming out next Tuesday? I could see all kinds of charges for stock manipulation. You know, they had 10 days advance notice whether it was going to be for or against them, and I just couldn't stand it. So every lawyer in this building said we were not covered. We have about 13 attorneys. Every lawyer said this commission is judicial as well as legislative and administrative, and you're not covered, but I knew we were. So I asked for an attorney general's opinion, and he said we were. And from that day on, the press is here every Monday when we vote. And that's been the greatest boon for the commission of anything I can see. A lot of cartoons, Sunshine, you know, all the different newspapers did the, calling this Sunshine. But it was a great, for the people, because really, this commission is isolated. We regulate 20% of the state's economy. It has a great budgetary impact on everybody's lives, and nobody ever knew what they did or where they were. Because now I know why. The press was never allowed in. Now they're here every Monday, and it's kind of a day, you know, a weekly thing. People look and see what we do, and then they follow us very closely. And I'm most grateful to the press, and I thank them every time I have a chance. Because without them, my story never would have gotten out of this building.
Is that your first race?
No, I ran in 1970, the same year that the Kramer-Carswell fiasco. And I say I ran. I let them file my name. The legislative delegation in Orange County came to me. They're all men, and they said that it's time a woman was on their delegation. They're all Republican. And asked me if I'd run for the legislature. And I remember calling Bill Kramer at 11 o'clock, whenever it was, and asking him, did he mind? I was his coordinator for the Senate of Florida, and I said, I know I'm committed to you for the Senate. Do you mind? And he told me, now, if you get in that, they're going to get you because you're with me, and I don't think you should. He didn't want to keep me from the office, but he said, I said, well, I won't. They assure me they'll run my campaign. They just want to file my name. And I still work for you because the most important, we win the primary. And so he got his okay, and the delegation said they'd run the campaign. And at closing date, at 11:45, the last day of filing, Kirk filed two men against me at 11:45, at closing, you know, the last day. One was his former aide and Gurney's former aide. And the other one was former county chairman there in Orange County. And I really didn't even hit a lick, I tell you. We were so involved in seeing that Kramer won the primary and made it to the runoff. And then in the second one, he won by 1,500 votes for the legislature. And I'm really glad I didn't win. Because had I won then, you'd been in politics and in public life, you know, in the public eye. And when I ran in 72, I could say I was a housewife, not a politician, and bring a new approach to government. So I'm really grateful I lost the 2-county race. And bad session, that session, really. If you'd had to run on that record, you couldn't have gotten anything, really, if you'd voted your conscience.
Did Kirk help the Republican Party in the 4 years he was in office?
I think the first year he did. And I've heard a lot of people say that they thought it would be better to get rid of him, that we'd be better off without him. I don't. I think we would be much better off with Kirk even as governor. The party, you know, he was not party oriented. He had just been a late switcher. And he made a mistake, I think a lot of elected officials make, in surrounding themselves with young, bright young men that don't have the feel for the people or the party, and get to be great. He was just so ambitious. His problem was he wanted to be vice president the next day. And it was hard to keep his feet to the fire. He could have been the greatest thing for the Republican Party of Florida, of any greatest giant step we ever took forward. And it knocked us back when he got defeated. But I think we're better for it, because I think you can't build from the top down. It's just almost impossible. And we have said, when I first filed for this office, a young man that's my aide now worked in my campaign for a while, and then he went to ministerial school. I talked him out of ministerial school and got him back. But he couldn't believe how, and he'd been worked in all the Democrat campaigns, and I had a lot of Democrats working in my campaign. And they couldn't believe the cohesiveness that we have in a campaign. I guess, you know, this is in the general. If I wanted to plan a flying trip, we went to 18 cities in 5 days. And we just, you know, get on the phone and say, we're going to be in Pensacola at 7:30 for breakfast, Don, and we'd like you to arrange it, and, you know, I'll be there. We'll be at noon, you know, in Funiac Springs, and we'll be that evening, so and so. We just call one person in the county, tell them we're coming, get a crowd, have an affair, and we're going to be there. And he still can't get over that. He says, today in the Democrat Party, it takes 3 days to decide which one of the people you call in that county without offending all the rest. There's no one individual you can call that doesn't really make you some enemy. And you got to, you know, be so careful who you select. And that is an advantage. We do have, in the counties where we're organized, we've got good people, and you can turn it over to them. I'm coming, you handle it.
Where do you see the party 10 years from now, in terms of the executive branch and the legislative branch control?
Well, if we win the governorship this time.
Do you think you will?
I think it's a, you know, they say we're not. Everybody says we're not. I saw a poll last week, 70%, you know, going to vote for Askew again. But I remember when that was, Kirk had 70 and Askew had 7. About this time of year, during the legislative session. And, you know, then that fall, it all blew up. I see the same thing happening. I see the governor taking on his cabinet, you know, one at a time, because he's strong. If you get a poll that you're 70%, you think you can now clean house, and you take on that many people and run yourself, you'll make some enemies, and that's what happened to him. I think we've got a better chance than most people give us any credit for at all. It's an undercurrent. I travel a lot, and I feel it wherever I go. That the scandal is going to backfire. The Democrats have their own problem in the state, and it is going to backfire on everybody.
How about the legislature?
In 10 years or now?
Well, say, you know, looking ahead.
I think we'll. That's my bag. I like to tell everybody that's where, you know, everyone wants to run for governor and everyone wants to run for statewide, but if we could take over the legislature, you know, they'd come to me and say, so-and-so ought to run for the Senate. And I say, can you win in your district? They'll say, we can't elect Republicans to the House or to the Senate, State House or the State Senate. But they think we can win statewide. I think you have to build in your county and elect, and I think in 10 years, I think we'll have a majority because of the uncertainty that's going on in the state. People don't have straight party line, you know, they don't, you can't say this is Republican, this is Democrat. And we have the young people. Our party just filled with young people in Florida, which is unusual. I met a man the other night who couldn't believe. I went to the National Security Forum up at the Air War College. And he was from Indiana. No, where was he from? His name's Kaiser, and he's the lobbyist or something for the Kentucky Fried Chicken. And he said, I can't believe you're a national committee woman. And I said, why? And he said, I never met one that wasn't 65 years old. He said, they just always give that job to the senior, you know, most respected woman in most county, most states. And he said, I can't believe it. And I said, most of them in the South are very young, you know, because of the emerging party in the South. Now, I guess that's why I'm so converted to a two-party system, is the check and the balance that it provides probably to everybody here. We're Republicans, like in some states I read about, you know, I'd be out beating on the other side of the fence on a state level just to provide some balance to it.
Are the two parties here splitting on ideological lines? One becoming more liberal and the other becoming more conservative?
Not more conservative, I think.
More conservative.
I think you see the Democrat Party going way to the left in our state because of the large block that comes from the populous areas that are Democrats, and they got represented, you know, one man, one rule, and got all 20 some odd legislators from Dade. That's when you saw them swing way over to the left. And the Democrats, we have a lot of real conservative Democrats in the state that are more conservative than the Republicans.
You see them moving into the Republican Party?
I see that trend. I think 10 years, if it continues like it's going to, and I don't like conservative liberal parties. I think that's terrible because if one side wins, you're locked out. You know, I like it that you have a lot of philosophy, different grades of philosophy in each party, because whoever wins, you can appeal to that individual, you know, to the Stennises or to whoever is, you know, in there. I'd hate to see it ever write down ideological lines. I see the Republican Party coming to the middle and the Democrat Party going way over to the left is what I see among the young people. And it leaves the old Democrats way to the right and some Republicans, you know, way over there with them. But I see the movement to the middle. I'm ultra-conservative on some things and really liberal on others. And it'd be hard to say that I vote, you know, in the things I deal with, you know, party line. We don't have one for it. I like to stick together. It's a few of us, you know.
What do you think, assuming, now I don't know if it's a safe assumption, but let's assume that the public disclosure law passes.
Mm-hmm.
What effect do you think that will have on candidate recruitment insofar as the Republican Party is concerned?
I think we'll have really wealthy people running, you know, that just don't, it's a hobby. Or you'll have people running that's going to be their entire income. The legislature or whatever it is, that's going to be their total income and they're going to give everything else up. That's what I hear. We have a lot of them over there say that with the kidnapping and the kooks and the, you know, they don't want anybody to know what they have. You know, they're like everybody thinks that, no, they had the kidnapping and just 11 miles from my house. A man was kidnapped that owned a little bit of shortening factory. But they thought because he owned the factory, he had a lot of money. You know, and he was kidnapped for $30,000 and held for, you know, 4 days. And it's frightened everybody in our community, you know, telling anything they've got. A lot of people aren't very solvent. You know, they might, like a lot of us, you know, we're living on it, and they don't want to disclose that. I like the bill that where you'd file your source of income so people know there are no conflicts. We have legislators here that have some pretty big conflicts. But,
well, I thought this current bill they're debating now is a source bill.
It's gotten down to that. We got 19-page amendment to it this morning. I read the amendment. I don't know what it's going to be. But I think that we should have source because I don't like conflicts and I see so many. But I don't think you can legislate morality. If you're going to lie about return, you know, or where your money comes from, they're going to lie anyway and take the chances. I think you have to. Income tax filing type thing. I wouldn't be opposed to it. You know, it's going to hurt me, but it might hurt somebody else. You know, for their safety. It's such a crazy, crazy world. There's a man and his son killed last night where I live. Really nice couple. We've seen him at the Villanova at the restaurant to eat and everything. And the paper says that these three boys drove up and the service station that he owned and he didn't clean their windshield and he shot them both. It's just crazy things, you know, in a little bitty town like I live in. So, a lot of people are afraid to get in public life today. People that I thought 4 years ago. It would be stars by now. Don't want anything to do with it. Safety, the stigma that's becoming associated with politicians, and kind of, you know, just marking time. I think it'll be over in 2 years. I think by 76 it'll be a 100.
What effect do you think Watergate is going to have on Republican development in Florida and in the South?
It ain't gonna hurt us in Florida. I don't think. I'm just telling you the trend. We've had bigger Lincoln Day dinners, bigger fundraisers. I spoke at a dinner a week ago Friday, had 800 people. It's just amazing. And it was their second fundraiser of the year. And it was only, you know, only about 3 or 4 months into the year. I guess all of us this year have noticed the big attendance at our fundraisers. And I think the feeling I feel there is you can't have a one-party, you can't let this make you be a one-party state again, or a no-party state, really. There's no such thing as a one-party. It's to be no party. Everybody, when I first became active in politics, they were Holland Democrats or Burns Democrats. You know, their allegiance was to the individual, not to the party, ever.
How about insofar as candidate recruitment?
I don't see that Watergate's going to hurt it. Again, we have the advantage, if you want to call it that, of the cabinet. You know, almost entirely being under, you know, grand jury investigation. Which, Kirk used to say that when he was governor. He'd say, he called them the seven dwarves. He was bad, you know. He'd say, seven dwarves, they just frustrate him. So, they got their hands in the cookie jar, you know, he'd say all the time. The other day, Nat Reed, who's the Assistant Secretary of the Interior under Rogers Morton, who was Kirk's, you know, environmentalist in charge here. He's gone to Washington. He came down and gave a speech, and he says, you know, old Quad used to say they had the hand in the cookie jar. He says, we didn't know it was up to them. So it's bad, you know, that you have to trade on people's bad luck, but I think it's not going to cruise a plus. We got lots of trouble, you know, because of the national publicity on the Watergate. But in Florida, the polls show us that people still would vote for Nixon, again, over McGovern if he were running. They don't condone any of the dirty tricks or the illegalities or any of that. But at the same time, the Democrats getting themselves into trouble, I think it's just going to kind of wash out. A lot of people don't want to do anything. You know, they say, this just didn't a year. You know, sit this out. I think we'll pick up a seat. The House seat, Gunner's seat, should be a Republican seat down there in Lake and Pasco. It would have been ours last time. Again, it was a leftover feud from the 70 campaign. Kramer's aide ran. And just, you know, too much identity, you know, just too much. Should have had, again, a fresh face. You can't be somebody's aide for 16 years, I don't think, and then step out and be the candidate and look fresh and, you know, new. And he has been as far as people are concerned.
I'll take it. You think Gurney is vulnerable in a Republican primary?
Well, not if he's, you know, not indicted.
Only if he's indicted.
Yeah, in a Republican primary. I think he'd be hard to beat if he's not indicted by the grand jury. I find this other indictment, which is a political indictment that the Leon grand jury gave him and was released, you know, it's hard to explain it to people. You know, they say, well, Gurney's been indicted. Where I've been, they said that. And I said, no, but, you know, the judge and the jury voted that was not an indictable offense, that filing of a campaign treasurer or whatever it was. It was political. People don't understand that. And I'm wondering now if, you know, an indictment. Did you see it? I saw a poll the other day where how many people think indictment and guilty is the same thing. They don't understand them. In this country, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, but lately the charge is broad, or what remain in people's mind. They don't follow the whole. They kind of tuned out. I know today I was with some people and just stopped to buy a paper, and then these people said, I don't want to read a paper anymore. I read all that junk I want to read. I hadn't read the paper in 3 weeks. You know, they're just absolutely uneducated people. They're just turned off. They don't want to read any more bad news.
Party pretty well enough, and the leadership of the party pretty well controlled by the people who worked and supported Kramer. Whatever Kirk machine.
I'm trying to
say
there
was
a Kirk. There never was a Kirk machine.
Well, there were Kirk people.
Yeah, they're pretty well gone. I think you can't say that we have a lot of Gurney people. State party. I think they're Republicans. I don't think they're identified with the faction anymore, as far as Kramer people. He was Mr. Republican, you know, he'd been here, the first one elected and all that. But he doesn't come to Florida very often. He's well respected. It's just a shame he's not in Congress. You know, he should have stayed. He shouldn't have run. And, but they don't, you know, they don't put their life on the line or anything, you know, for Kramer. It's just, I think they were more Republican than those that came in for Kerr.
Right, organization.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, they're, golly, you see, Skip Rafalas ran against Kirk. Did you know that? Senator Rafalas ran against Claude Kirk in the primary. And then he endorsed Kirk in the runoff. He and Eckerd, Kirk and Eckerd made the runoff, and Skip Rafalas endorsed Kirk and went in business with Kirk. When Kirk was defeated, then they started a bond investment banking business down Palm Beach. There are a lot of Rafalas people. A lot of people work for Eckerd in the organization. A lot of people work for Kramer. But again, I'd say that it was more of the Republicans. They stayed in just because their candidate lost. They didn't leave. Where Kirk's people left.
How do you think the party organization and its candidates in this state compares with those of the other southern states?
I know. I see they got 3 Republican candidates in Georgia. I was surprised that you could get that many for a governor. But I think we have more. We're a bigger state. 9th largest, going on to the 8th. We have what I call a professional legislature. Meets every year, paid adequately. And I'm really proud of the Republicans that we have. That quality I'd like to see elect more of. They're really fine, fine people. I think we'd be above the rest of the South. And probably growing faster than the rest of the South. Yeah, we have to. I'm thinking of what states are in the South. Yeah, we're way ahead of them.
When you first came to Florida, you said the first went to register and surprised your husband and said you were Republican. Then what did you do insofar as party activity was concerned?
There was no party, you know, semblance of it. I wasn't interested in being an activist, you know, young children and 58, I got involved in a sewer fight in Maitland, which is a little town we live in, and we were the young people that had moved out in that area, which is a bedroom of Orlando, and just were building our house, and we were on septic tanks, and we thought we should have sewers, which is a really funny thing. So we tried to appeal to the city fathers, who'd been there 110 years, I know, I remember they were old, white hair, that they should put in sewers now in 58 instead of when the people come. They're coming, oh no, and they wouldn't listen. We really tried with reason. So about 10 housewives and a couple businessmen types got together, and we ran a mayor and 2 councilmen against them from our new area against the old establishment in the town. And we beat them. We won all 3 seats. And that's when it dawned on me, that's the way to get action, you know. You kept appealing to them and taking all the rations. We packed the meeting. We take 400 people to go up there, which is a lot of doing in a little bitty town, you know, and appeal to the city fathers to do what we say. No response, but we beat them all and got the sewers, and that was in 58, and now this commission regulates about 700 water and sewer companies in the state of Florida, so I'm big in the sewer business. But I didn't do anything partisan-wise until the Goldwater campaign. No, I worked for Gurney in 62. He was our mayor in Winter Park when I met Ed Gurney. And then we moved from Winter Park, you know, out to Maitland, which is, they touch each other, it's his bedroom. And when he ran for Congress in 62, I ran the Maitland part of his campaign. They came and asked me. I remember I had a little bitty child, and I, you know, walked all those houses pushing that baby stroller. In 64, I worked for Goldwater and Gurney. And then in 66, Gurney said he'd like me to, you know, be a key person in his campaign. He sent me off to campaign school, which is the biggest mistake of his life. He sent me off to, you know, the congressional campaign schools that they send there. Each congressman can send 2 people. I don't know if they still have it or not. And he signed me up, and Eve Brunellar, and the 2 of us went to Callaway Gardens, I remember, and he stayed there for 7 days, you know, and morning, noon, and night, and all secret and closed. Robert, Spencer and Roberts from California came and lectured, and it was really fascinating for a housewife to get all that professional training. and came back and did such a super job. His opponent was through. And that's, you know, I wanted to keep on practicing, so that's when I helped Kirk and then became involved in the party. Became a precinct committee woman in 65, 66, 60, I still am. 68, I ran for national committee woman against two other ladies. I never have it easy. we went run by election. And a former president of the Federation ran, and the former president of the Federation ran. Two women ran. And Kramer, interesting, and Muff was from there. They were both from the same county. And he had to stay out of it. I still read every once in a while in the press, you know, Kramer elected me state a national committee woman, but he had to not be in that one because he was the national committee man and Kirk was running somebody against him, Matt Reed.
What's his role in the party now?
Now, he's Kramer, national committee
I know man. That, but is he, beyond being national committee man, does he take an active role in the
national
party state?
When we summon him, you know, he's super busy making lots of money. He's on the defending the party in the Rule 30 suit with the Ripon Society. He's co-counsel to the Rule 29 committee, which I serve on, you know, just revamping or looking at all our rules for the next convention. He serves as co-counsel there. I see him there. He comes to, I guess, maybe two meetings a year in the state, you know, to our committee meetings. But as far as speaking and, you know, we consult him a lot. You want to know something. He has a brilliant mind. I think he has the finest legislative mind I've ever seen in my life. He's just skillful.
Is there any chance at all of him running for office again?
Mm-hmm. I think he's very interested. I really do. I was with him, Boca Raton, about 2-3 weeks ago, and he said that he's talking to people at the White House, whoever that is, and he said that they were asking about the dirty race, and he said there's no way he could get in it because of, you know, bad blood, but that not count him out. So he's making a lot of money practicing law, but he is first and always and will be, you know, a congressman. I think something gets in their blood that long. He knows how to get legislation passed. Jerry Ford, you know, hired him to help get his nomination through. He was hired by the House but in some suit where the House representative was sued, and both sides hired Kramer to win the suit and won it. He's got a brilliant, you know, it didn't matter whether it was a Democrat, President, Republican, his legislation passed, and he's a great man of vision, but he's unfortunately, you know, the timing, he looks like a politician, you know, if you're going to draw a little caricature of a politician, and he just looks like it, and he's been in Congress so long, so he acts like it.
Gerald Ford became president, would he be a potential cabinet member then?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, probably. He really respects him. And, you know, we serve so long together. Yeah. I thought he might, even, you know, in this administration before it got messed up so bad. He'd be great transportation. He worked a great deal in that. He was the author of the, you know, Interstate Highways Act. And knows a great deal about it. But as I say, he's very busy on a big scene in Washington.
Anything else? What should we ask you that we haven't asked you?
Well, you didn't ask me anything about women. You're not hung up on women in public office, huh?
Well, we're interviewing.
Well, I'm the only one you find.
we're going to another one when we leave you. As a matter of fact,
Cherry next. This is our
Gwen's report. A good friend of mine. Tell her hello. I really like Gwen. We girls stick together. You must notice that. People ask me, you know, that a lot. Do I think this is a good year? I think it's a great year for women to run.
You find many interested in running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find them excellent public servants because they don't, they're not used to making deals. You know, they just say it and do it like it is. I just watch them across the street, the few we have, and I'm always proud of the way they act. You just do what's right, you say what's right. Your entire income isn't tied to your success in public life, so it gives you a little bit of a cushion.
Do you think the Republicans in the South offer women more opportunity for politics than the Democrats?
Oh, yes.
Why?
I guess it's the minority feeling that, why, if it's such a big thing, how come the Democrats didn't do it when they had control of the whole act? We've got Elaine Gordon and Gwen Cherry elected as Democrats. The first Republican elected in Florida woman was Mary Grizzle from St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
don't know how many years she's been up here. Betty Easley's from over there. Bess Johnson was a state senator. We have Lori Wilson, who was a Republican. She just changed independent because of the local situation where they had four Republicans running, some Democrats, and she felt last year she could run better as an independent, and she ran as an independent, but she was a Republican county commissioner when she ran. So I really do, for the same reason. So just many reasons. I just think that, again, you know, they, I mean, women are a majority, but they feel like they've been handled like the minority. You know, and so it relates to the minority party. The structure in Florida is different. Maybe you've already looked into that. Our party structure is one man, one woman for every county by statute.
By statute or party rule?
Well, statute in 66. They changed it in 68, a party rule, and they kept it. The Republicans kept it. I think the Democrats have altered there somewhat. They had to because of the national trend that came down upon them. They've got a couple of national committee men or some. I don't understand their structure anymore, but it used to be by statute. And by statute, we had to have 50% representation at the conventions until, in 68, by statute, we had to have half women, both parties. But then they changed it by statute, by party rule. We've abided by the previous practices. We had 50% women delegates. Democrats had whatever they had to have. You know, the quotas. Green, purple, whatever it was. I can't remember. You know, they really were tied up tight, I thought, in the way they selected their guys. Really funny. It was a fun state to be in for that presidential primary. And, you know, the first one, first time we'd ever had one. Everybody in the world was running. All the money, you know, was on one or two, and Wallace took them all. You know, he just spent everything. We're too sophisticated for that. How could that happen in Florida?
What would happen in Florida if Wallace ran head-on in a presidential primary against Ruben Askew? Let's assume for a minute that Askew gets reelected.
Wallace would win.
You think he would?
Sure. Yep. Sure would.
End interview, Paula Hawkins. No more transcription. This tape.